Hi, y'all. Nicole here. This podcast is intended to inspire you on your personal spiritual journey to inner peace. I am not a psychologist or a medical doctor and do not offer any professional health or medical advice. This applies to the podcast guests and or co-hosts. If you are suffering from a psychological or medical condition, please seek help from a qualified health professional. You are listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition, a podcast that helps kids and teens shift their vibration, develop their intuition, and become more empowered. If you want to feel a deeper connection to the divine, better understand your purpose, and use your intuition to drive your life, then being here listening now is no coincidence. Welcome to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Energy healing can often help ease stress, anxiety, and manage emotions. This is true for adults and kids alike. There are many forms of energy healing, ranging from breathing, meditation, Reiki, and more. By giving children tools to recognize their imbalances and mindful practices to heal themselves, they can begin to feel empowered. Here to talk with us about these topics is Dr. Catherine Perkle. Dr. Perkle is a clinical psychologist and certified Reiki master. She often incorporates energy healing into her clients' sessions as she believes that nonverbal trauma can become stored in the body. Welcome, Dr. Perkle.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. And back again, not on this. Obviously, I love having you on. So truly, truly welcome. Before we dive into what adults can do to help kids and teens with, you know, any form of psychic or intuition and the energy healing aspect of it, really wanted to get, for people that have not maybe listened to the episodes when you were previously on the show, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a clinical psychologist in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I say I kind of went through my dark night of the soul awakening in 2012. So if you would have met me kind of pre-2012, like, I would have been a much more traditional clinician. I definitely always geared towards like the humanistic existential piece. So like why we're here and the fact that we're living knowing we're going to die was always fascinating to me. But like in terms of like kind of taking that more mystical path, definitely from 2012 onward kind of really started awakening and incorporating more energy work into my practice. And yeah, so I joke with my clients all the time because I'm like, they totally see me as this totally woo-woo girl, but I definitely used to be much more grounded in sort of traditional practices as well. Yeah.
And what is the Reiki? How do you incorporate that into your sessions?
Yeah. So I got certified in Reiki several years ago now. And basically, it's just kind of a complementary tool to the therapeutic process. And typically what I do is when my client gets in the office, I'll do like a few sessions to get to know them, to get to know their history, their inner child work that we're going to be working through and trauma work that we're going to be working through. And then Reiki kind of serves as this really nice complement in terms of trying to find where that trauma is stored in the body, where the inner child might be hiding out. And then also, I tend to, when I'm at the third eye chakra, and I always say to people, I'm like, I don't obviously classify myself as a psychic medium, but sometimes if there's a past life trauma or several past life traumas that are somehow influencing or informing this lifetime's experience, that'll come through when I'm at kind of at that third eye chakra point.
Oh, okay. Interesting. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you work with kids or teens a lot, or is it primarily just with adults?
I only work with adults in my practice, but obviously I have a lot of clients that are parents. And it's kind of funny that you reached out to me. I have another clinician that was like wanting to pick my brain too. And I was like, well, I don't work with children and teens, obviously, but I am a parent myself to a 10 and a 6-year-old. And then also, yeah, most of my clients are parents too.
Yeah. I think the reason why a lot of practitioners don't necessarily is obviously the age too, right? And there's just a very fine line between being able, especially when kids are in their developmental phases and stages. So it's until they get older. But I feel obviously it's very important that we're at least giving adults, whether you're a parent or you're a teacher, or maybe you're even in the field like you are, and even if the person is not necessarily a Reiki master, to just be able to understand what are some of the tools and the techniques that people can do, and just, you know, help them understand a little bit more, especially if, you know, we were all children once. So we clearly, and if you're listening to the show, it's either you've had some experiences yourself growing up, and or there's a child in your life or a teen in your life that is going through these kind of things. So it's like, what is it that we can do to help? And everybody's at a different stage. So what are some things, let's just kick it off, like that you would recommend people do?
Well, I think obviously because I've kind of been tapped in this way for a long time, I started the conversation early with my kids, especially like normalizing and validating if they were ever bringing to me sort of experiences that they were having, you know. And then my older son is pretty sensitive. He can like close his eyes and see, sometimes he can see colors in the room. Sometimes he's tapped into people's auras. And I do think that it's something that a lot of times, if we're not encouraging it, it tends to fade out. So just like, I guess, normalizing that conversation and allowing space for them to like explore that would be a first step, if you can start from the beginning. But obviously there might be someone listening today that's like, well, I never did that, and I've got a 15 and a 17-year-old now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's start, I guess, with the children that are in the younger age demographics, like what maybe parents or adults can do. What are some techniques or some things that they could do together with their children?
I think kind of the same way that we encourage, or I would encourage like my clients, like in terms of doing energy work on yourself, obviously, is just bringing intentionality to the breath, maybe teaching the kids while they're relaxing, maybe while they're getting ready for bed. We can imagine like closing our eyes and starting with that light kind of emanating from the heart center. And you can take them through some like little meditation exercise where you tell them, you know, eyes closed, focus on the breath, you know, breathing deeply in through the nose, gently out through the mouth, and connecting to that light in that heart center. And then imagining that the heart, you know, that the light is extending out through the top of the head, out through the fingertips, down through the soles of the feet. You know, if you want to bless the room, sometimes I'll have them imagine that like the light is kind of spilling from their bodies to the bed frame, to the floors, up the walls. Like, and I feel like children have better imaginations than adults do. For instance, my younger son is like, I think one time I had brought in, like I got Reiki certified with angels. So I'm kind of used to using certain angel energies for certain parts of the chakras. And then just also like in terms of who you're kind of praying to with different aspects of self. But Archangel Michael is kind of thought of as like the warrior protector angel. So like when I'm putting them to bed, I think one time I was like scratching his back and I said, you know, and we can imagine Archangel Michael and his big blue light standing at the four corners of the house. And if we want to, his presence can be in each and every bedroom, keeping us warm, safe, and protected throughout the night too. And he just loved that. And so now when I'm cuddling him at bed, he's always like, he'll ask me to say the kind of Archangel Michael intention. So something like that.
That's really beautiful. I never really thought about the blessing of the room, because I've always, you know, as an adult, when you're clearing a space energetically, either through prayer, through intention, you can say, there's a million ways that you can do it, but it's like clearing space, but teaching children to also bless their space and bless their room. So energetically, they're not having to clear it or cleanse it, because it could be draining if they don't know what they're doing, but just that light that you're saying from within them to also just feel safe and secure.
Totally. And I literally feel like that makes Dylan feel like, because he went through a phase too where he was like a little bit scared, you know, like someone was going to break in and like, do we have the security set? You know, it's like kids get these sort of weird anxieties, and sometimes bringing something that's like bigger than self, bigger than our human experience. I mean, I think it's helpful. And it, I mean, that's why my practice has become that way too. But it's like, yeah, it's just, there's something very relieving being like, no, it's like literally energetically not possible for anything to come in and hurt me or my family because I bless this space this way.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. On the meditation, I think that, you know, what I was reading up on for children at different stages or ages, they can't really focus as much. So for meditation, I guess, would you say that starting with like smaller time frames in the beginning with them is the best? And then as they get older or as they practice more, you can extend the time frame. So I don't know, is it like a minute maybe that you're asking them to focus on their breath and meditate and, you know, all of that?
Yeah, because I think about, again, the differences between my older and my younger son. My older son's much more mellow and chill, and my younger one is kind of like more of a stubborn. So I would say like, and I've tried to do breath work like in the midst of a tantrum, and I would say sometimes it's really hard for them to receive that if they're not in a calm space. But then what I might do is once things have calmed down and they're feeling a little bit more contained, that might be the place where you just kind of say, you know what, baby? You know, did you feel that rage kind of swelling in your belly? Did you feel your heart kind of racing? Like, mommy wants to show you how you can bring some breath to that. And like, and I want you to feel like that your heart rate kind of starts to slow and the tension in your belly starts to release. And just little things like that, I think, can be really helpful. And maybe the breath work is better for the parents.
Right. Yeah. Cause I'm thinking of, you know, I mean, I love all these techniques and I wish I had known them when I was younger or my parents knew them when I was younger, because it would have just made me more calm. It would have made me feel more connected, I guess, to source, all of that. But yeah, the meditation piece, I think there's different ways to do the meditation. So I'm just getting from Michael is that if you want to do this with your children, yes, for the parents, but really just it's more calming their mind, kind of clearing their mind, taking some deep breaths. And if it's 30 seconds, if it's a minute, just getting them kind of in the practice. And maybe it's not when they're upset. Maybe it's actually when they're in a calm state. So like you were saying, when you're going to bed, you could probably incorporate that maybe into bedtime or even in the morning, like before you get your day started as the children are waking up. It's kind of like, okay, before we go into our day, because I was a very sleepy child. Like I never wanted to get up in the morning when I woke up. My mom was always like, come on. Well, some kids like, I guess, pop out of bed, but that was not a me thing. I just remember. So I think it's just a matter of if that technique tends to work for you, but also it's something I just feel like it's an activity that you can do together, right? Which is kind of another amazing thing. And it doesn't have to be a really long, arduous meditation practice itself when you're sitting there like, and, you know, doing all of that.
Yeah, I'm out of that with the sleepy time thing. But I also think that's another beautiful space for you to, like, I always say there's never anything bad that's going to come from putting just a really good intention out from your energetic source to your child. So sometimes they don't even know I'm doing it, but I might like have my forehead rested on them. And kind of your heart center connected to their chest. And you just are literally like, yeah, imagining that from the third eye and from the heart, maybe you have that green and that indigo light just kind of passing between you both. And again, just setting that intention and to kind of shift and, you know, that energy and love like between you and the child, I think is always really cool too.
Yes, yes. And speaking of that, because to me, that's also an energy healing. It may be like a connection to your child if you choose to do that. But when you were showing me that and visually, I was like, that's an energy exchange. That's an energy healing. What are some other things either as a parent you can do, whether or not you're certified or anything? We all have energetic healing abilities. I believe that because we're energy sources. What would a parent do, or how can a child maybe activate their own healing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, kind of bringing it into the conversation. I know another thing that I do, you know, we talk about ways that we just make the kids feel more safe and secure. So they know what Palo is. They know what Sage is. And there's been times where one of them is kind of creeped out about something. You know, it's like the monster under the bed, or like they heard a scary story at school. That might be a time that I'm like, let mommy get some Palo and I'm going to light it. And you know, and they kind of watch me kind of going through the room and just kind of saying a little prayer, like only love and light live here, you know, as I go to the corners of the room. And I think it's just through osmosis, them seeing kind of some of those like healthy rituals that we're engaging in. And then kind of hopefully like they're kind of pulling that in to see that like, because then that kind of releases them from that burden. They kind of see the room being cleared. They feel that they can suddenly go to sleep more easily when they were feeling all anxious and insecure. So like things like that. Or like I'm imagining even with like an older kid, like telling your kid like, they're in the, I mean, I can remember my first heartbreak. Everyone knows this. That literal physical feeling. It's terrible. And you feel it. And they've done studies that show, I think, like second to the brain, there's the most amount of neurotransmitters in the heart. So we really are feeling it. And like, I can just imagine, like, if you're sitting with your 16 or 17 year old and they're just sobbing and they're saying that their heart is hurting, like, imagine being like, baby, let me like put my hand on your heart and just transfer some light to your heart and just let them experientially feel like, wow, when my mom does that or my dad does that, maybe I really do feel a softening. Maybe I really do feel an opening, a relaxing. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I was the other day trying to explain to someone who, and you probably get this because you're a healer, but how I know somebody's a healer when they either sit down in front of me or and they're on their phone and spirit shows me that their hands are just lit up like with light, right? So that's, for me, that's visually how, or my mind's eye, how I can see that. But again, we all have it. So they were showing me to explain to this person, put your hands together in prayer form, kind of, put the friction together like this. And then as you do that, like you start to feel the energy and you move your hands away, that sort of thing. And so I was like, oh, just again, my mind, everybody knows how to do that. But no, not everybody does. So A, that's one, how you do it. That's how you activate it. But then when I was preparing to speak with you, my angel said, that's what you need to bring up on this episode or this interview too, is that for any age of a child, like just putting your hands kind of together like this, having that intention or asking that intention to activate the energy healing, and then you can put your own hands on your own heart and feel it or wherever on your body. Like you said, if you're a parent and you're trying to help that child or teen, whatever they're going through with energy, they can also do it on their own. So that's a way of helping to kind of get someone thinking about, okay, how do I activate the energy? What does that look like? It's all about the intention and the power behind it.
Totally. And so you can kind of see how some of these things kind of carry themselves through. And in my therapy practice, it really is so much like you were saying, it's about intention and then like ritual. That word always comes to me over and over again, but it's just like these healthy rituals that we can engage in that make us feel at peace, that feel like we're not alone, that feel like a higher power that's like containing us and that we can connect. And so many people don't have that or they're not raised with that. And so, I mean, to give that to your children from an early age is like so awesome.
It is. And then also before I forget this, when you were talking about the sage, because a kid can't necessarily light fire, right? But a parent can. However, there are also these amazing sprays. I've tried a bunch of different kinds. I use also clary sage in my practice. You can get it online. I get the organic kind, and then I actually pray over it and energetically charge it. And I use that in my healing sessions, but I also use it in any session, and it helps overall. Clary sage, when you look at the properties, they help with anxiety, with stress. It's a beautiful, beautiful essential oil. But then when you supercharge it and or you use it for room or space clearing or healing, it helps. And you can just dab a couple on your hands. You can put it on your pulse points, but you could also drop it in some water in a spray and use that as a spray. Or you can also purchase, and really any essential oil. But if you don't want to have like a smell necessarily, there are a million amazing sprays out there. One I really like is by a practitioner. Her name is Rachel White. She does Totem Readings is her brand, but she calls it holy water. So I just recently used it at an event where I was like spraying it around. It essentially has some sage in it, but it's water. So I was just imagining as you were talking, it would be kind of cool if you had like a spray next to your child's bed in the room. If you weren't around or you wanted to, again, also as a teen, spray that around and use it on their own, right?
Like that doesn't involve fire.
Yeah. And empower them to be able to do it on their own. And like, okay, again, and also with the rituals or the routines that you were talking about, like, okay, when you go to bed, if you want to do this, you can kind of spray in the corners or spray over your bed or whatever. I think that would be a beautiful kind of addition if you feel so led to do that.
You know, what's funny though, my first thought is children can get so rigid in those things. And then I'm like, oh God, could that become like an OCD? Like,
oh, true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a vision in my head. Like, I think if I were to give those to my nephews, I'd probably wake up the next morning and the whole bottle would be gone, you know? So maybe you are giving it to them or helping. Anyway, whatever. If you're a parent listening to this, do you, whatever works for your child. But just know, yes, they may get a little bit overzealous with certain things, depending on their age. So we talked about breathing. We talked a little bit about meditation. Any other sort of maybe connection techniques? I think, again, the on the forehead and the heart to heart is both connection, but then, you know, a little bit of energy healing too. Do you have any other kind of like tips or techniques there?
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking about, again, just like encouraging them if they ever have really interesting dreams that they bring up that you want to talk about. Again, just like validating and exploring those with them. I can remember my two-year-old, and it's funny, I have a terrible fear of flying, and I totally have the sense that I died in a plane crash. And when my younger son was two, he's like in half broken language telling me that he had this dream as I'm changing his diaper. I mean, he's that small that I'm changing his diaper. And he's telling me that we went down in a plane and that he was there with me and Papa and that I was trying to swim to him and that we didn't make it. I'm like 2 years old, you know, and they're so powerful when they're small. And they talk about how the veil, right, tends to thicken, I think, you know, after age like 5 or 7 or something like that. So again, just like encouraging them to be open to taking them serious if they're like seeing things, feeling things, experiencing things. And then, I don't know, I was just thinking at one point when we were talking, I was like, yeah, and then just like pulling them into playful things like oracle cards or tarot cards, like if they ever want, you know, like pulling an animal card for them for the day and reading what that, things like that, I think are really.
Or an angel card. Or
an angel card, exactly. Who's protecting you today?
Yeah, or saints. There are also saints out there that, whether, I'm not making this a religious thing, but then, you know, there are a lot of churches out there that have saint cards. So if you want to go down that route a little bit more, also depending on if you're religious, but also spiritual. And then, yes, there's a bunch of angel oracle decks out there. There's also archangels, ascended masters, spirit guides, animal guides.
No, I just was going to say, I think it's just the more that we bring it into like normal conversation. Crystals was another thing I thought of too.
Yeah, I got into crystals when I was really young because my family just, they had a million, was more particularly my mother's mother, so my maternal grandmother. And so I got into them. I remember going to crystal shows and all kinds of things and having quartz, and she let me pick them out. And of course, now I have a lot of them. But over time, yes, I think crystals are good because it's also one, they're pretty to look at. They don't hurt anything if a child just even wants to have it. And then even telling them the different types of properties with them, like this one helps with grounding and protection. This one helps if you want to be more calm or get a really good night's sleep. If they're having, again, vivid dreams and they're not necessarily understanding, but they want to understand it, but then yet also, again, feel empowered and connected on that. I love that idea. There's also crystal cards. So if you don't want to have a million crystals in your house or gemstones, you could do that too. And you can still, you can teach them that you can pull in the intention or the properties of a certain crystal or something as well. And whether you have the cards or not, you can also just learn about them. So I think that's also a good activity as a family you can do.
Uh-huh. And then I don't know why this just kind of came into my mind's eye. I'm thinking about all the things like I wish I knew when I was like little, you know, that I would love to have had. And, you know, I had like a rough middle school years. Like I was such a target. Like I was like so tall and so blonde and just awkward. And so even I think about like those awkward middle school years of like, you know, if someone's being really nasty, again, not setting bad intent, but truly like maybe trying to send them light or softening, or even putting like a bubble of like light around you where like whatever is being said is kind of bouncing off of you. I mean, I think those are good kind of like imagery exercises that you train the kids to use too.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was feeling led to talk more about the age of a child when they're younger and then how they can use some of that more protective energy as they get older. So depending on the age of your child and where you're at, there's what's called like aura, like an aura bubble and then aura washing. So when, again, they're younger, you can teach them about their aura and you can say, okay, picture that your aura is this bright light. It's made up of different kind of colors. Again, that visualization. And then you can explain to them, okay, this is this protective layer. This is like, again, a kind of a boundary, energetic boundary and space between you and other people and or situations and places. And as you're teaching them about the aura, then there's like what I would call aura wash. Like I've talked about it on the show, like when you're taking a shower as an adult, you can be thinking about energy washing down, but you don't have to actually do a physical activity to cleanse your energy and your aura. And so for children, again, when they're younger, teaching them about that and that they can picture their aura just getting filled with light and or different colors, it's expanding anything they don't want on them. They can like have it release. Just simple, simple things. As they get older and into the middle school age, like you're talking about in the teenage years, then you can incorporate more. They can start to learn more about it. And it's like, yes, then your aura is really protecting you between these people, these specific situations. Kids can be really mean, very much like bullies. And it's not just even in person nowadays, it's online and everything else. And so then there's also energetic cord cutting and giving them visualizations and techniques about, here's, imagine scissors between you and this person, and you're cutting the cords and energy, and your space is protected and they can't touch you. And it's one thing to talk about it energetically, I get it, because then there's also the emotional aspect, but it's still a very, and you as a doctor, me not as one, I can imagine that in your mind, mentally and emotionally, just giving people, no matter what your age is, tools to help to understand that you're also putting up boundaries and you're having those expectations of whether or not you're going to allow somebody to treat you a certain way, right?
100%. I was thinking too, the cord cutting. I was like, oh, there's another breakup technique. We can melt the heart. We can cut some cords. You know, it's like all those things are so powerful. And like you're saying, I think from the mental health perspective, that's exactly why I do what I do. Because, well, multiple things. I think most people that end up in a therapy office tend to be on the highly sensitive spectrum, right? We are kind of that HSP. We're that 20% of the population that sees and feels and experiences things on a deeper basis. And then with that, it's like, if we can bring meaning and context to our suffering that's bigger than just us, or bigger to, or something bigger to take it away from us, like, I just think there's only like positive and light in doing those things. So
yes, that's beautiful. And just for people, including myself, that don't know, what does HSP stand for?
Highly sensitive person. There's a book that's literally called The Highly Sensitive Person. And I can't remember the author's name. I think it's Elaine something. But it's kind of my first introduction into how we might frame ourselves in terms of why we're struggling. And I mean, basically what it means is, rather than being a left brain, logical, linear thinker, you are a right brain, intuitive, creative feeler.
So what we would call an empath.
Exactly. And I am that, and all my clients are that. And so, and like, one of the greatest, but also the worst things is that we tend to experience the spectrum of emotions on a much grander scale. And that's for better or for worse. So that, right, the joy, the buoyancy, the passion is higher than anybody, but then the sorrow and depression and just the bittersweetness of life, we experience that deeper too. So
that totally makes sense. And thank you for sharing that. I will be sure to include the book in the show notes too, for I want to read it. All right. So we've talked a lot about different techniques and all of that and the self-healing. Is there anything else on, like, maybe prayer? We didn't get into that. To me, the way I approach prayer is less like prayer per se, but to God, universe, angels, source, whatever. And then my intentions are whatever that intention is. That could be a daily intention. That could be when I'm going to bed in gratitude, what have you. But is there anything prayer related that you might want to share?
Yeah, I guess my first thought, or the word that's kind of coming in my mind's eye is, or mind's ear, is manifesting too. It's like, you know, when my kids are sick, like they were, Nicole and I had to reschedule because I had like terrible sinus infection running through the family. But yeah, like manifesting wellness, manifesting a positive outcome on a test, you know, just kind of, again, giving them that space where they feel like they are empowered to have a positive outcome in all aspects of their life, I think is beautiful.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I probably pushed this out of my brain from when I was a teenager. I am a terrible test taker, or I was. I don't know if I would be better as an adult or not. I don't know, but I just, the pressure for me, it's like if it was a verbal test or you asked me to write things out, I was so much better because I could communicate that way. But I should say, maybe I should clarify, that it was like multiple choice, multiple tests. Even when I knew the answer, just like the stress of it just would mess me up. And so I would get so like just freaked out like the night before, you know, especially a day where you had a bunch of tests, like when I was in high school in particular. So my dad taught me that. It's like that visualization technique. And he didn't call it manifesting at the time, but it was more like just clear your mind and imagine that like the next day you're walking in and you feel really confident. And as you're taking the test, like all the answers are coming to you. And then imagine that when you get the paper back, it's an A. And I would just, you know, at first, I don't know why I thought this, but I guess also because I was a teenager and my hormones were raging, I was like, this is a bunch of hooey, you know? But it actually happened, in the sense of, I think it, regardless, it's almost a little bit of a placebo effect too. Like whether or not you believe in manifesting and attracting and all of that, which I do believe that that's possible. It's also the just getting you in that right mindset and energetically like resetting things to where it's pulling you out of that lower vibration or that negative vibration. So I love that you said that because you could teach children at any age. My dad, I don't even know if I've ever shared this on a psychic story before, but when I was younger, he was explaining to me the power of, again, manifesting, but without using that. And he explained to me, he's like, hey, this is how you do it. And I'm going to really cut a long story short, but there were these lunch tables. So when we would get in as children, the closer you were to the lunch table in the front of the door, the sooner you were in line, the sooner you would get in the classroom. I don't know why it was important, but I always was like on the last bus, could never sit in the front of the room. So it was always in the back of the room. So I was like, I'm going to use this technique when I go to bed. So when I wake up and whatever. And sure enough, when I got off the bus, there was a bunch of teachers that were sitting in the front table and they never sat there. And as soon as I walked in the door, all seven of them got up off this table and walked out and the entire table was empty. And I went back to my dad the next, you know, that night and I was like, Dad, it worked, it worked, it worked. And so then it solidified. And then I was able to use that technique with so much of my life growing up. I think I was maybe 6 or something at that time.
I think that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other, you know, the only other place in space I can think of teaching a kid to use that I would teach like an adult client also is obviously if they experience death throughout their childhood, again, just encouraging them to like make those connections through meditation or prayer where they feel like they can still have a relationship with that person. That would be, you know, I'm all about, it's like death is again, another one of those like things that's like, God, it happens to everybody, but we just treat it like it doesn't exist. And so again, just like that would be the only other aspect of the human experience that I think you could bring that to a kid also.
Yeah, exactly. And with death and as people pass over explaining, and I know a lot of adults probably already do this, but that even though they're physically not here, the energy is still there. And if you want to try and communicate or you sense them around, it's probably because energetically they are still around. And just having, like you said, the conversation to see what they're experiencing. Some kids may be way into it. Some may not. Some actually may see or hear or feel things on a much deeper level, i.e. be more of a medium type of thing. So just understanding and helping them through that process too. And just the grief aspect too, is what I'm hearing Michael say, is that just don't forget the grief, that kids also have a deeper knowing and an understanding, speaking of that veil that you were talking about, because it's so much thinner that it's almost like in our minds as adults, we may think that things are processing or it takes us longer to process it. Whereas children spiritually, they just have a deeper sense of knowing because they just came from there, right? They haven't been separated from it for as long as we have. So they kind of just, things settle in and resonate with them is the word I was looking for, more deeply and in easier ways, I should say, it just flows.
Yes.
I mean, we've covered a lot. I would say that, you know, if there's anything else, like what I was trying to say earlier too, like in terms of books or things, if people have book recommendations, whether it's for themselves, like adults, or if they've, you know, like, because I'm seeing picture books, so like kids' books on the spirituality side or the healing side, feel free to send them to me so I can either update this episode in the show notes and or on the website, because I think also just reading as much as possible about it. There's so many more resources out there than when I was a child. And for children, no matter what age range you're in, whether you are just starting out and you're in that 3+ age, or if you're in the middle school age or the teenage age, there's different books out there for children and teens that would be helpful. So if you have any, let me know, listeners.
And I think one thing I would add too is like you were kind of saying, you when your dad was sharing some of that and you were like, whatever. Like, I think we just have to like share whatever hits and, you know, resonates with them. Great. You know, I always say like the human experience is so interesting. And I use this frame with my clients all the time because I think when people come to therapy, it's because when you're a child, you kind of have nothing that is yours, right? It's like you're born into a family you don't get to pick, a house you don't get to pick. And sort of you slowly are building like your external wells of self, right? As we grow, we get friends, we get jobs, we get houses. And so I think what happens is, and we keep thinking, we're like, okay, that's going to be the thing that makes me happy. Oh, no, no, no. This is going to be the thing that makes me happy. Oh, no, I got it. When I get married, when I get the dog, when I get the house. And then what happens is once we've finished doing the external build, and we're like, well, I still feel a little bit like empty. I still feel a little bit lost. I still feel a little bit sad. There's an invitation for the internal build of self, where some of these concepts that we're talking about that really land and resonate with us as we're building our internal well hit. So for a child or adolescent, it's like we can plant seed the best we can, and then they might have to come back around to it when they're in their 30s.
Yeah, that's so powerful, because I would hate to imagine if I hadn't had some of those seeds and some of those building techniques and foundational elements for when I got to be an adult. Because what you're saying is resonating and is so true, is that, because I've said it before, is that I was like, I had it all, like the house, the car, the job, the relationships, the friends, all of it. And I was still miserable, hence me coming out of the psychic closet fully, not just with my friends and family, but that was me and my path. But I went back to all of those things, but in a deeper way. And if you haven't even done that as a child, I think that's also too why people are having such more profound spiritual awakenings at this stage in life, is because, again, if somebody's out there saying, I never had that, that's probably why. Because it's like you're starting from scratch, whereas some people can build. So giving children and adolescents and you know, those different age ranges, those tools throughout their life, and like that you said, they come back to it, is super powerful. All right. Anything else you'd like to share, Catherine?
No, I think we covered a lot here.
I know we did. I'm excited. Hopefully everyone else listening out there feels the same way. And I know you don't work with, you know, kids or adolescents, but if people want to get in touch with you and work with you directly as an adult, how can they?
I've got my website, drkatherineperkle.com, and you can find me on Instagram and Facebook under Dr. Catherine Perkle also. So those are all my spaces and places.
Well, thank you again for being back. I always enjoy speaking with you and hearing from you, and glad that you're doing really well.
Yeah. And I did put a book up on Amazon called Soul Centered Therapy, if anybody wants to check that out as well. It's just kind of an introduction to a lot of the work that I do in my practice.
Yes, that's why you were on.
Oh, and I have a podcast also called Soul Centered Therapy.
I was going to say, and then I was on yours. Anyway, so to recap, she has a website. She's on the socials. She has a book, Soul Centered Therapy, and she has a podcast too. So if you want to listen to that, you can. Well, again, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on as always. Thank you for listening to A Psychic Story Kids Edition. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so you never miss an episode. For more information, go to apsychicstory.com or follow Psychic Kids on Instagram.